Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Henderson. He is a data scientist at the Hilltop Institute at the University of Maryland, Baltimore campus. And Dr. Muslund, she is also at the Hilltop Institute at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, but a policy analyst. Both of them have the same first name, Morgan, slightly different spelling. So for the purposes of this episode, we're going to reference you both by your title. Dr. Henderson, Dr. Muslim, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks, Dr. Nick. Appreciate being here.
So if you would, you both have an interesting background. It would help if you could share a little bit of the highlights of how you arrived at this point in your career before we get into the topic at hand.
Dr. Henderson, do you want to go first?
Sure, love to. So I graduated from the University of Michigan with my PhD in economics, go blue, in 2017. And I worked on economic history and health economics while I was there. And within economic history, I worked on very data-intensive projects involving historical records. And so this actually gave me a really good background in processing large, unwieldy files that aren't in nice, clean spreadsheet form. So I graduate in 2017. I work for a year at Amazon out in Seattle as an economist. And then I moved to the Hilltop Institute, where I currently am, and where I've been for about 3.5 years. And I work on a variety of projects, price transparency in hospitals being one, but predictive modeling, policy evaluation, kind of the big grab bag, which speaks to the versatility of the organization.
Yeah, and I can go next. So I have a bit of an unusual background for health services researcher. My doctorate is actually in veterinary medicine. I got that at Michigan State University. But even back then, I was interested in public health. So I did 1 year in Seattle where I worked with the King County Department. And then I did my training in epidemiology at Johns Hopkins, where I was supported by a postdoctoral fellowship in pharmacoepidemiology and where I did a lot of pharmacoeconomics. So looking at affordability issues surrounding drugs, especially high-cost drugs. And once I was done with that, since I have a long-time interest in affordability and low-income population, I joined the Hilltop Institute, which does amazing work with Maryland Medicaid and vulnerable populations. And this is where I joined up with Dr. Henderson and started to look at more of the economics issues, including this hospital price transparency that we're going to talk about today.
Fantastic. So for those of you listening, we'll link to the article that appeared in the New York Times that featured all of the work that you did. You essentially did a deep dive into the data that has essentially become available since the government issued regulations and said that hospitals had to share their, I'm going to say price. I don't think it's cost information. I think it's price for the purposes of this conversation. And your piece, which if you haven't read it, go read it now before you listen to the rest of it, was just, I can only describe it as mind-blowing. The differences that you found across the country for basic common procedures was astounding. Tell us a little bit about the work, if you would, how you got there, what were the steps to arriving at this? And I've got to ask, how difficult was the data analysis? Dr. H?
Thanks, Nick. Well, thanks very much for the kind words about the article. And we certainly want to credit Sarah Cliff and Josh Katz, who wrote the piece, and Dr. Muslim and I provided the data analysis and kind of data support. It was a long journey, I would have to say. It began in January 2021, where I had heard of the price transparency regulation. And because this was actually supposed to start in 2019, but hospitals were given a one-year delay, and then there was the lawsuit. So this was kind of a long time coming. And starting in January 2021, I just wanted to look at the data. I'm a data person. I love data. This is what I do for fun. And so for fun, and it sounds weird to say this started as a fun project, but for fun, I wanted to just download some data from big hospitals and just look at what their prices were. And so this quickly became a separate piece that Dr. Muslim and I actually worked on together, which came out in the Health Affairs blog in March. And we just found that large hospitals weren't posting their data. So they were posting some, but it was clearly, and the phrase we used was unambiguously non-compliant, because you can't really tell when a hospital is being perfectly compliant, but you can tell pretty well when it's being non-compliant. So that was our first look, was not what is the prices and what's the variation, but which hospitals are actually posting data. And so that led us to create a database of about 60, 70 hospitals within about the top 125 or so largest hospitals by bed count. And so we created this internal database, basically downloading a bunch of huge spreadsheets. And we realized, hey, wow, we have this really interesting tool here where, true, we can look at compliance, and we did, but we could also dive deeper. We could actually look into the data to see, hey, how much is this hospital charging for colonoscopy to Aetna, to United, to Blue Cross Blue Shield, et cetera, et cetera. And so we got in touch with Upshot, and they got back in touch with us. And so we linked up with Sarah and Josh at the New York Times, and just started working together to pull together some clean data on the handful of procedures that we wanted to collectively look at. And so the data analysis itself was honestly very straightforward. It was just counting stuff. That's the kind of state of the world right now, where before this regulation came out, the public didn't know how much Aetna student plan or whatever Aetna charged a certain hospital how much they paid a certain hospital for a certain procedure. And now we know. And so it was basically a summarizing process rather than a hardcore data analysis process.
Dr. Muslim?
Yeah, and what's interesting and what I'd like to add is that hospital pricing is actually very complicated and very complex. And I'm sure a lot of people have heard of this, but if they haven't, I'm going to briefly mention it. Hospitals have something that's called a charge master, which is a list price. So if it's similar to when you're buying a car and it has, you know, this list price or this sticker price that you're not necessarily going to pay, but that's what's out there. And so in the hospital world, that's the charge master. And that had been public for about a year, in some states longer. And what this new regulation really changed is that we no longer just have this charge master price, which actually has a moderate amount of value, and we move towards getting these negotiated rates. So what a plan, a specific insurer, and a specific plan is paying, because just because you have United, you don't necessarily know what you're paying. What kind of plan are you? Are you a United PPO? Are you a United EPO? And depending on that, you'll get a different rate. And what we also got with this regulation is something called the discounted cash price. So if you are a patient and you're either uninsured or underinsured, meaning maybe you're out of network or you're in a high deductible plan, you're also typically not going to pay this charge master price. You're going to pay a discounted price. And now these hospitals are required to post these. And to me, all of this was just incredibly interesting, because this is the first time that nationally, and not at a state level, you were going to be able to delve deeper into what people and insurers were actually paying for hospital services.
So I, you know, great points there. I think, I've got to say, I'm surprised to hear you say it was easy, not least of all, because there's a degree of obfuscation. And I love your sort of term of unambiguously non-compliant. I'm definitely going to add that to my vocabulary. I think that makes entire sense. If you're unambiguously non-compliant, you should now be being fined, I think, is the current circumstance. But Mickey Tripathi talked about this recently, and he said, you know, please, institutions, stop being minimally viably compliant. And what he was referencing was the obfuscation of this data. And the fact that you said you could compare it, I imagine, and certainly some of the data that I've seen suggests that, you know, and let's pick an example, because you reference this in your data and, you know, the commentary you talk about this cash price for people that are paying cash, actually lower than the price negotiated by a huge insurance company. Let's pick a colonoscopy from the report, University of Mississippi Medical Center, 1,463 with Cigna, 2,144 at Aetna, and 782 with no insurance as a cash price. So I'm paying less if I just say, no, I'm not using any of that. It just completely blows my mind. I cannot even begin to understand a pricing model that works that way. And I know this is early data, but you've probably had the most experience with it. Tell us a little bit about how this unfolded and how you see all of that. Dr. Muslim?
Yeah, I can start. So yes, this was huge. It's still huge because for the longest time, we didn't know that these cash prices or these people that were paying cash were necessarily paying less than the people with insurance. And there were a couple reports, some in the Wall Street Journal, some in the LA Times, that said, listen, I went to the hospital, I didn't charge my insurance, and my bill was actually lower than I would have paid with my insurance. But up till now, this wasn't known as a wide-scale phenomenon. And then when we looked at the data, that's when we started to see, wait a minute, these hospitals do give significant discounts to people who pay cash, and this seems to be pretty widespread. And then, and Dr. Henderson, who's an economist, I'm sure will have much more to add to this. This is an interesting phenomenon where you're seeing, okay, I'm a patient, I don't have someone to negotiate with me, and yet I'm getting a pretty steep discount off of the charge master price. And then there's these big insurers that theoretically have a huge negotiating power, and yet they're not getting the same level of discount. And I'm actually going to turn it over to Dr. Henderson because I can see in his eye that he has so much to add.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Dr. Henderson and Dr. Muslim. They are both at the Hilltop Institute. We were just talking about the variation in pricing and the fact that you discovered that this cash price was a lower value than that negotiated by the insurers. I have to believe that the insurers are going, wait, what? Dr. Henderson?
Yeah, thanks, Nick. That was definitely extremely interesting. As Dr. Muslim noted, I believe there had been anecdotal reporting about how you can get a lower cash price if you don't pay through your insurance and instead pay cash. And I think there's even some startup companies devoted to this concept. But with this new data, with this hospital standard charge data, we can actually see this systematically. And I want to say for the first time, because, and this is the thing that more Dr. Muslim and I usually stress, cash pay patients do not show up in claims-based data sets. This is what almost all hospital pricing research so far has used, claims-based data sets, usually within a large commercial data warehouse, like the Healthcare Cost Institute, which is great data. But these cash pay patients are effectively invisible. And so I don't know of any systematic research that tries to look at this difference between cash pay price and negotiated rates. And, you know, we're just scratching the surface with this. I strongly believe that.
So I have to believe that this is going to drive down cost. Is that a reasonable assumption? Do you think that we're going to see more affordable care? We haven't seen much of it yet, I don't think, but it is still early days. But this seems like a seminal piece of data and the opportunity for research. Dr. Henderson?
I really hope so, but I don't think this is going to be the silver bullet to the rising hospital costs we have been seeing over the past 10, 15 years. In principle, it's true. If a hospital is in a competitive market and is competing against other hospitals for patients, then certainly these hospitals should now have more of an incentive to compete on price. In principle. Now, this may not be true for hospitals that don't have competitors in the market. It may not be true for hospitals that are competing on quality or they're kind of their own brand. And so I hope it's going to lead to cost reductions. CMS certainly hopes it's going to lead to cost reductions, but I think it's too early to tell.
I mean, I'm thinking that this is going to be part of the opportunity for additional follow-on research here, where as we look to make healthcare more affordable, there is no one silver bullet, but now you've got this additional layer of data. Do you think that the value proposition that we're now receiving as a result of this, A, has to be proven out? I have to believe, Dr. Muslim, that this is part of your future research, is to say, okay, we've got this. Do we see any change? Are you going to keep doing this? And please tell me you're expanding the database beyond 60.
Yes. So we are definitely, this is just the beginning, as Dr. Henderson said. So this is also just the beginning of the research. And actually, so we did a big piece in the beginning about compliance, but we did not set out at first to look at whether hospitals were compliant. We were hoping that they were compliant, and we were hoping to jump straight into, okay, is this regulation lowering healthcare costs? Which is why, though I'm still optimistic, it is a little bit of a challenge. If hospitals do not comply with this regulation, it is going to be hard to systematically assess whether it's working, and it's also going to be hard for the regulation to do anything. You need data to get effects. So that's going to be your, I guess, rate limiting step right here. I also want to point out that it's been a litigious process. I won't go on too much about it, but this is something that is still quite controversial between the hospitals and CMS. So that's ongoing. As far as the research side of it, definitely interested to see where this is going to go. The challenge is going to be that this public data gets regularly updated by hospitals, but it's hard to say when it's updated. So you have to keep checking websites to see when this data becomes available. And so in research, we like to do before and after, and it's hard to sometimes determine the before and after when these things get continuously updated. And so that's on top of the compliance issue. But we are hoping to see some good results. Some states have put in price transparency regulations earlier than 2021 and are reporting some early positive results. So definitely stay tuned.
I think, exciting, because I'm with you. Without data, you can't improve anything. We've got more data. That's a good thing. You bring up an interesting point that I hadn't even thought about until recently. So if they publish the data, how do we know that it's accurate? I mean, did you have any assessment? So you look at that and say, this is what they say they're charging. And that's important, because going forward, that comparison of, do we see any changes? Couldn't you just leave it and say, well, this is it, we've published it? Tell us a little bit about where you think this is going. Dr. Muslim?
So that has been actually our area of research currently. How do we validate this data? How exactly, like you said, how do we know that these prices are actually correct? And we've been talking to other academics in this field actually about, for example, the cash price, which has gotten a lot of attention. And a lot of feedback that we've been getting is, okay, how do you know that these patients that come to the hospital and say that they're going to pay cash are actually getting the cash price? And yes, up till now, there's not a very good way to validate it, which is something Dr. Henderson and I are working on, is can we use other data such as IRS reporting or utilization data from hospitals to try and take that standard charge data that hospitals are posting and validate it. Is it correct? Is it what hospitals are actually charging patients and insurers?
So I think extremely exciting times, lots going on. Dr. Henderson, if you think about the future, if you had a wish, what would you like? I'm not going to say institutions to do, but, you know, in terms of the data, what would be helpful in all of this? Because ultimately, that we're all working together towards the same goal, which is, you know, affordable healthcare that is economically viable. What would really help you? And where do you see your research going?
Gosh, that's a good question. I would hope for three things. I would hope for full compliance among every hospital that is supposed to be complying with this regulation. So that's one. I would hope for full compliance with the insurer price transparency regulation, which is a new regulation slated to begin mid-2022, where insurers are going to have to post public standard charge data sets, the equivalent data sets. And in an ideal world, there would be standardization and centralization of these disparate data sets, because, you know, like we mentioned earlier in the program, a large part of assembling this database was just pulling down, downloading, cleaning, synthesizing, assembling these essentially spreadsheets from 60, 70 different hospitals. These were in different formats. The variables are called different things. And that was a very kind of mundane but very real challenge to working with this data. It doesn't come with a nice data documentation code book like a lot of other data sets do. So it has been difficult to work with. And so if I had a wish, it would be for those three things. Now I have to say, from what Dr. Muslim and I have observed, some hospitals that weren't posting data as of January 2021 are now posting more data, it looks like. But we've also observed the reverse, where some hospitals that were posting big spreadsheets with names of payers are now not posting them. Yeah, so that was very surprising when we learned that.
Wow. And in the remaining time, Dr. Muslim, what would your hopes for the future be?
My hope is really, again, like Dr. Henderson said, compliance and ease of use. Right now, even with complying hospitals, this data is not easy to use for patients. So if I'm a patient who wants to price shop, it would be very difficult for me to do so. I'm hoping that this will change in the future and that this will effectively lower healthcare costs.
I concur 100%. Unfortunately, as usual, we've run out of time. It just remains for me to thank you. I think on a basic level, for actually taking this task on, achieving what you've managed to do, I think, you know, completely seminal piece of both data study and interpretation, and also the data processing to bring that. So the normalization of that data, I can only imagine, based on the limited data sets that I've seen, I think we all owe you a debt of gratitude. And I'm excited to watch and listen to this journey and hopefully hear, you know, from you on an ongoing basis. There's a part of me that wants to talk to you every year and hear your annual report. Maybe you don't want to do that. I can understand, but I just have to say that this is extraordinarily valuable, really delighted. And I'm just so pleased that you were willing to come on the show and share some of the experiences. It's been a true pleasure. Dr. Henderson, Dr. Muslim, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nick. The high and rising healthcare costs is, I think, a concern for all of us. And I think it's going to take all of us to find a solution to this.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.